Hello, welcome. Welcome to this Microsoft Virtual Academy session where we're focusing on the hybrid cloud and Windows System Center and Azure. In this session, we're following on from part one where you looked at some of the key Windows Server and System Center technologies. But we're going to take it even further now and see how we build the private and hybrid cloud environments that you're looking to build. Now, my name is Matt McSpirit. I'm one of our technical product managers here at Microsoft, and I'm pleased to be joined by Pete Zerger, who'll introduce himself in a second. But my role at Microsoft is really helping to analyze our competitive technologies out there in the industry, particularly in the Windows Server and the virtualization space, but more so in the System Center space as well. My experience is focused on virtualization, systems management, and I'm a VCP and a Microsoft certified professional as well. I've got extensive speaking experience across a number of our conferences like TechEd, MMS, and if any of you are going to be at TechEd EMEA, which is kicking off next week, I'd love to come and see you and speak to you on the show floor. So it'd be great to see you there. And I'm pleased to be joined by Pete.
Good morning, everyone, or good afternoon or evening, as is appropriate. I know we're not all in my time zone this week. So again, I am Pete Zerger, Microsoft MVP, consultant, speaker, citizen of the world. So I spend a lot of time out in the field with, you know, Microsoft private and public cloud technologies. So I'm really excited to take the next steps with you as we move into the world of hybrid cloud. You know, like Matt, I'm a frequent speaker at the Microsoft conferences, the Management Summit, TechEd. Like Matt, I'll be there in Madrid, so it would be fantastic if you're joining us for the session today to maybe just come up and say hello and shake hands and meet in person after my session there on Wednesday.
But not before, because you'll be focused.
I will be focused. I will be in a dark hotel room somewhere practicing, and as soon as that session is over, we will all go enjoy Madrid together. I'm excited.
It's an open party invitation.
That's exactly right. Matt's buying the drinks.
Yes. Excellent. Thanks for that, Pete. My manager will be thrilled. So, in terms of this session, what do we want to deliver? And those of you who joined us on the previous session a couple of days back, you'll know the kind of things we're looking to get across and the kind of expectations we have on you as an audience. We want to help you as IT pros effectively build your knowledge around System Center, the hybrid cloud, Hyper-V, and to do that, we expect a level of understanding already that I'm sure many of you have got from the previous courses. So a basic understanding of System Center, ideally 2012, preferably SP1. It's been out a little while now, so hopefully you've got up to speed with some of the capabilities, some of the key features that are in there. Windows Server 2012, so again, a little bit of a basic experience in that will be very, very helpful. And Hyper-V, obviously, as well. That's the foundation of that virtualization layer of our cloud story.
Yeah, absolutely. And Matt makes a good point here. Out on the Microsoft Virtual Academy website, you'll see some other courses that are available to you. There was certainly a System Center 2012 SP1 Jumpstart, another around Windows Azure for IT pros, and a great Hyper-V on Server 2012 Jumpstart a few months ago now as well. So
yep.
Certainly you may not be able to climb the entire mountain today, but lots of material to help fill in the gaps that we're not able to cover today.
Yeah, there was a great one on for VMware professionals as well, which it's one of my personal favorites.
I was going to say, you might know something about the person that delivered that, wouldn't
well,
you?
Well, yeah, nice guy.
Yeah. Matt's a virtualization nerd, so the secret's out.
Thanks.
So let's talk about what we're going to cover today, just our topic. So the sessions, again, because this is a level 300 exercise we're involved in today, the sessions are going to be 90 minutes long, so deeper, slightly lengthier, hopefully very interesting sessions for you. We'll start by transitioning from where we finished on day one. We're going to have a look at monitoring our hybrid cloud environment. I'm not going to put you to sleep with all of those monitoring concepts that you might not care much about. I want to show you how you can use Operations Manager and System Center in less than 10 minutes to get visibility into your cloud availability, capacity, and performance right off the shelf. We'll look at connecting System Center to the public cloud. And that being said, we're really going to be looking at hybrid cloud with our System Center hat on today. So really looking at how we can connect our System Center components into both, not only the private cloud that we created on Tuesday, but how we can leverage Azure in a hybrid environment and view all of our private and our public in a single pane of glass. That being said, we will take our System Center hat off for a moment and talk about Azure briefly, because I'm guessing there are probably a few IT pros out there for whom you know, infrastructure as a service on Azure is probably new.
Yeah. Or even just Azure might be new. You know, they may not have embraced it with the platform side of things or the SQL side. So yeah, it's going to be a good intro to Azure, but focused very much with that virtualization hat on, with the VMs running up there.
Yeah, great point. And just as in our session on Tuesday, we talked about self-service with our audience in mind. You may recall, if you were in attendance, we looked at App Controller for our developer audience, for our more technology savvy folk, right? Mm-hmm. And we looked at Service Manager and its self-service portal for situations where we need approval workflow, we need that ITIL integration, and
maybe change management and so on.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And maybe we have an audience that isn't quite so technically savvy. Mm-hmm. So nice to sort of customize.
To get that balance, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So our schedule today. See, we're going to have about 90 minutes in this first session. We'll have breaks in between, so 90-minute session with a break. And lunch or a meal break after our second session. So I'm guessing some of you may not be having lunch at that break across the pond, so to speak. But we'll be working our way, from the beginning, from the beginning of the process to the end, very sequentially, as we were on Tuesday. So we'll talk about service delivery and automation in the afternoon, kind of moving over into Orchestrator and some of those self-service interfaces and looking at what our options are for our different audiences, and then really, again, looking at the top of the mountain here, reaching the summit, where we have a fully ITIL-integrated self-service experience that's intuitive even for those, application owner audiences that maybe aren't, fully virtualization savvy. Mm. They're really just more focused on doing their business, right?
Yeah.
So let's talk about our goals for today. So we're really not here to take you step by step through all of the basics. We really want to talk about not just what we're doing, but the how and the why. So, as with designing our cloud fabric and designing our self-service experience, we were really looking at that through the lens of our customer, of our business units, or if we're a host or our external customer, and understanding what they wanted us to build for them. And what their service level expectations were, so we could understand which features we really needed to light up in the fabric to deliver those capabilities. And I have no doubt in the field, Matt, that's something that you visit with customers about all the time, just to help them understand when they should actually use features.
Yeah, exactly. And when you were meeting with customers and partners, from a Microsoft standpoint, we're helping them understand, certainly from an evangelism perspective, just the art of the possible. But the beautiful side of what Pete brings to the table in this scenario is real-world examples from actually implementing this sort of stuff with customers and partners. So it's very, very valuable to get both the what you can do and then the how and the why you'll do those kind of things. You may choose to do Service Manager a certain way. You may choose to integrate it with another product a certain way. And that only comes from your experience. But Microsoft provides those core products and that frame and talks about the art of the possible. But you've got that extra value that you can add to the attendees today.
Yeah, great. And that's a good point. I definitely work out there in the field with customers who don't live in an ideal world. So mm-hmm. so I'm helping customers understand how we can implement these technologies based on their requirements and really what their limitations are today. So maybe they have already adopted Windows Server 2012. Maybe they haven't at all. Maybe we're still working with other hypervisors like VMware. And as we saw on Tuesday, System Center 2012 is multi-hypervisor aware. We have great management and deployment capabilities even to the VMware and mm-hmm. Zen Server stack.
Yep.
So let's talk about the MVA community for just a moment, if we could. So, Matt, I'll let you take this, actually.
If you're not part of the MVA community today, get signed up. It's an awesome community with free readiness. This is an exceptional opportunity for you to really embrace, and as Pete pointed out, some of those courses that are already out there existing that you can take offline, you can watch on demand in your own time, and build up your knowledge and your experience as an IT pro with this set of technologies. And it's current. It's got a lot of current technologies. We're always refreshing these courses with new and exciting different technologies to broaden your horizon around the technologies that you use and implement in yours or in your customer's environment if you're a partner. And best of all, you get points for attending. So you can build up your score, you can compare with your friends on your leaderboards and start to see exactly what Microsoft has to offer in this technical space. I always like the competitive angle. You know.
That's an important point. You know, we might not attend if we couldn't, you know, outdo our friends and then have bragging rights.
Correct. Exactly. And there's a lot of people already registered. So a lot of over 1.2 million people taking advantage of the MBA courses, the MBA materials that are available for you to learn and to help build up your knowledge. It's an awesome scenario.
And last bit about that, there are some great R2 preview courses coming out in mid-July, if memory serves, around Windows Server 2012 and System Center 2012. So look out on MicrosoftVirtualAcademy.com and have a look to register and get, just continue this journey that we started here. Mm-hmm. We hope you get a good head of steam with these 2 days, and you can now get your hands your head around what's coming later in the year, a few months early. Mm-hmm. So here we begin. So day two, session one, monitoring, management, and operations.
Are you ready?
I am so ready. I've never been more ready. I'm going to take a drink and then I'm ready, actually. That's my pause for dramatic effect. And nice. On we go. So we're going to start with a very focused monitoring discussion. I know many of you out there may not work with operations manager on a day-to-day basis, so I'm going to try to keep it very relevant, very focused, very interesting, and we'll look at exactly how we can monitor our private cloud, our on-premise or hosted private cloud infrastructure in this first pass. So really looking at how do we get eyes on what it was that we created on Tuesday as we designed our private cloud fabric and our services. We're going to have a look at chargeback reporting. So chargeback is really important to avoid that S word, isn't it?
That S word.
Sprawl. Hmm.
My mind was going off on a different direction there.
Yeah, so I guess I have to warn you, Matt and Simon are really similar, except Matt is lacking that appropriate filter, right? So he just kind of opens his mouth and it comes out. So brace yourselves, because we never know what's coming.
Thanks.
But it keeps it interesting, right?
Well, yeah. For the duration of me having a job, yes. Thanks.
Nice. We'll talk about native chargeback reporting capability. So we'll have a quick look at chargeback as it was delivered to us in Service Pack 1. Some mm-hmm. nice improvements there for sure. And we will talk about optimizing your cloud. So something we said several times on Tuesday, I didn't count them, but we said, there's more than one way to do many things with System Center 2012 SP1. We will look at a couple of areas where creative problem solving can help. I mentioned that, we can do just about anything with Orchestrator. It's more just understanding if we should be doing certain things with Orchestrator.
Correct. And the thing with Orchestrator being such a powerful tool, people try to run before they can walk with some of these things. So we need to get the basics right and understand just those building blocks and build up towards those more advanced, more detailed runbooks and automation workflows that we can build as an example of one area.
Yeah, that's a great point. Rome wasn't built in a day. Mm-hmm. The cloud is a journey. We want to make sure you're running in the right direction so you wind up in a good place, mm-hmm. right? So let's jump right in. So we'll talk about monitoring cloud availability, performance, capacity with System Center 2012 Operations Manager. So I want to just line up for you some of our key cloud monitoring needs and how those map into Operations Manager, and then we'll go over there and have a look. So you'll remember we deployed Windows Server 2012. We created our cloud fabric, configured a lot of features and capabilities, not only in Windows Server 2012 SP and Virtual Machine Manager, but we worked our way up the stack building those services. But at the fabric layer, we need to make sure that foundation is ready for us to lay those services on top. So at the fabric level, we have management packs for Windows Server, for Hyper-V, for Virtual Machine Manager, that are going to give us visibility into our fabric. And we'll actually see, from a capacity perspective, two perspectives on our cloud capacity, which is important because, as you remember, we can thin provision in our self-service user roles, right? Mm-hmm. So at some point, we have to be prepared to cash that check.
So those MPs, those management packs you mentioned for Windows, for Windows Server, for Hyper-V, VMM, are they going to give us the visibility into, for instance, a vendor-specific storage array or a vendor-specific chassis or a rack mount server or a blade system or whatever it may be? Or do we need to look elsewhere for extra management packs to supplement that information?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Microsoft does a fantastic job of releasing free management packs to monitor Microsoft technologies, mm-hmm. but there's a huge System Center partner community, the System Center Alliance, they call it, and for third-party technologies, for VMware, for your storage vendors. If you go to the Pinpoint catalog, pinpoint.microsoft.com, out in the marketplace, you will find management packs from third parties to monitor, you know, VMware and some of your vendor-specific storage. You know, yep. I set up the Compellent SAN management pack from Dell just the other day, in fact.
Yep.
And VMM is going to give us limited visibility into the presence of some of those vendor-specific components. You know, mm-hmm. if I have the Virtual Machine Manager management pack installed in Operations Manager and I've configured the integrations that you're going to learn about in this module, I'm going to see my VMware host, logically speaking.
Yep.
I'm not going to have deep insight into their health and performance and capacity.
The fans, the memory dims, those kind of things. You would need a supplementary management pack from the server vendor in this case. And most of those vendors do provide those MPs for free as long as you have their stuff. So if you've got Dell servers, HP servers, IBM servers, whatever it may be, or NetApp storage, you're entitled typically to the MPs for System Center. So you just import them in, you configure them and tune them as appropriately guided by that vendor, and you start to build up a deeper level of insight into that whole environment and start to link it with the relationship between fans and memory dims right up through the application stack of stuff that's running inside your environment as well. So there's lots of insight that you gain through that.
Yeah, you know, really the best part about the whole paradigm of a management pack, you know, having been the monitoring guy as my second job for 15 years or so now, you know, I started working with Operations Manager back when it was Operations Manager before Microsoft even owned it back in 90-something, which means I'm older than 25.
Right.
but that being said, the management pack contains, you know, if you're not an ops manager person, it contains the definition of the you know, types of objects that are going to be interesting for monitoring in, you know, my Microsoft applications and components and my third parties, the discovery logic to go find those components is mm-hmm. there. And then the best practices for monitoring those is already built in, which means we don't have to be experts in every application because we know that model doesn't scale.
Yes.
Unless you're Matt.
No comment.
So network connectivity is one of my favorite topics in Operations Manager 2012 with SP1 because...
This was new in...
Yeah. So in Operations Manager 2007, we had basic, very basic network monitoring in that we were effectively doing just an SNMP ping, a GET, yep. every couple of minutes. Now, if you can discover a device, even if it's not a fully supported device, a generic device we call it, we're still going to get good visibility into the ports, and Operations Manager is going to do the port stitching for us. So mm-hmm. it's when we discover a device, we can tell it to discover just the directly attached components or to crawl our entire network, for that matter. So we want to make sure in large environments we don't use that recursive discovery because that can generate a lot of noise. And if the network team is at your desk, it's never because they have good news, is it? They never just come over to say hi. I don't know what's wrong with those guys. But that being said, it's going to put the port stitching together so we get a nice network vicinity view. I can see which ports are connected to servers, which ports are connected to other network devices, and it's not really designed to replace all of the tools my networking team is using, but it gives me some insight to hand off intelligently, doesn't it?
Yeah, and when you start to look at virtualization on top of that, you can create some quite nice views around the relationship between VMs, hosts, network switches, network ports, and so on. So you can start to see some real important relationship mapping views that can help you diagnose problems if there is issues on the network or wherever. So,
yeah, great point. So instead of blaming the network team in the war room, we're really bringing them, you know, our insight into the situation based on...
And then blaming them.
Yes. So we blame them after we give them a bit of intelligent
factual blaming. Factual blaming.
There's a new industry term. So that becomes a thing, it started here.
Hashtag factual blaming.
a new Twitter
trend.
We're gonna watch that one to see if that becomes a thing. We'll see. So let's talk about application availability and performance. You know, System Center 2012 Operations Manager in particular has a great new application monitoring feature, APM we call it, App Performance Monitoring, that gives us, you know, code level visibility into our .NET applications, which are, you know, apps that we would, you know, typically deploy into a private cloud environment. What I love about this feature is every time I implement this in a customer environment, we always find something. We implemented this for a Fortune 1 or 200 a few weeks ago and discovered that their load testing process, this was proof of concept. They just wanted to see that it worked as well as it did in the demo. Within the first half an hour, we had discovered that their load testing application actually wasn't load testing anything. It was completely broken. And
that's a bitter pill to swallow.
Yeah, it is.
With some factual blaming.
There you go. Here we go.
We're in there.
I sent a theme coming.
Yeah,
here. So we'll just call Matt the blame engine, I think,
at this point. Yes, thank you.
I'm not sure if all of you are familiar with the lineage of that app performance monitoring feature. That came through a Microsoft acquisition called Avicode. Back in my last real job, as I like to call it, in a corporation, I was the guy, the infrastructure architect, monitoring the e-commerce application, and I remember
that was your sole focus.
It was a big chunk. It was half of it, and I remember we brought Avicode in because we had some problems we just couldn't solve, and the agent on each server was something like $5,000. It was something like way more than the entire system center component family cost today as a whole. So this is now just a feature, and it's amazing. But when you need that sort of functionality, that code level monitoring, you need it. And now we get it as part of the deal. I like to say it just comes for free when you buy.
Correct. When you buy System Center. Correct.
So comparatively speaking, but we've got good, .NET. There's J2E application monitoring. If you have Java apps, that gets the J2E. In all fairness, gets much more exciting in R2. So
correct.
We have. I'd say what we have is first generation J2E monitoring now. We're going to get more .NET-like application performance monitoring in
R2. So that level of granularity, that level of depth.
Yeah, that visibility that's going to bring us up on par. So so definitely excited to see that. Alerting is part of every monitoring system, right? We need to be able to raise the alerts and then send notifications for the alerts that are most important. Ops Manager gives us a notification wizard. I can set up subscriptions so I don't have to send every alert I see in the console to my network team's inbox, to my Fabric admin's inbox. I can give them just the critical stuff, right? What's worth getting out of bed for.
And so, if I'm only interested in the applications that you were talking about, you mentioned before you were the app guy for half of your job, and if you're only interested in that particular view, Ops Manager can be very easily and quickly scoped to provide you just that view that's relevant to you. So again, the noise ratio that you as an individual will receive can be scoped very much down to what you're ultimately just interested in.
Exactly. With Operations Manager, if I can use the notification subscription wizard, I can scope that alert subscription all the way down to the management pack to a specific type of object, all the way down to the individual monitor. So I can be very, very granular. And that's a relatively easy skill to learn. There's a lot we can do in the UI. I like to say that monitoring is not a job that you choose typically. Monitoring chooses you. So if you're smart and helpful and outgoing, it's going to choose you. You can't be first, but you may be next. So be prepared with some ops manager knowledge, because this is absolutely a critical component to stay on top of our cloud environment.
Especially if you're providing a service to other people in your environment. If you're the infrastructure as a service for your consumers, and you're needing to provide a quality of service, a service level that they've signed up for, then you're going to have to be able to prove that. And Ops Manager is one of those tools that can start to collect those metrics and that insight. So it's very, very powerful across the board in terms of diagnostics, in terms of understanding what's going on, and providing insight back to the business as well.
Yeah, great point. And there's a lot of application visualization capability in Operations Manager. Actually, for any monitored object in my environment, I can right-click that object, and there's a navigation menu that will allow me to pick different views to surface alerts or events or performance data, or even to give me a diagram. I can think of an occasion where I had an OEM hardware technician in my data center ready to replace a memory DIMM, and he called me, and he said, "Which DIMM is it?" And I said, "You're the hardware guy." And he said, "Yeah, I'm the hardware guy. I'm not a magician, so tell me which DIMM it is." And I was able to right-click on my server and visualize in Operations Manager all of the components down to the DIMM. And when I could tell him DIMM 2, then we were happy again and we were in a good place. But that we'll have a look at that visualization. It's low-hanging fruit, shall we say.
I think those dashboard views are actually very important, because there's a misconception, let's say, from perhaps previous versions of OpsMan, that dashboards are very hard to create, they're very time consuming, they don't necessarily always show the information that we need to present. And I think in 2012, and more so even in SP1, that has changed. And I think it's easy, quick to create very customized dashboards that reflect specific information and views that you're looking for as a business. So things have changed considerably if you've got a previous history with OpsMan.
That's a great point, because the dashboard view has a new meaning now. A dashboard in Ops Manager 2007 is not the same as a dashboard in 2012. I've actually created quite a few of those in my own environment, and I'll show you a couple of them. But certainly as we move forward into the further on into the Ops Manager, the 2012 lifecycle, what we're seeing now are some of the management pack owners within Microsoft are beginning to release their own dashboard packs, because every management pack out there is actually written for Ops Manager 2012. They're all written for Ops Manager 2007, 2012 offers this additional schema extension that includes those dashboard views that Matt alluded to. So those dashboard packs will typically be delivered alongside the management pack, but separate. So maybe we should talk about what's monitored by default in our fabric. How about? So down there at the lowest layer, we've got Windows, we have Hyper-V, we have Virtual Machine Manager, where we have a lot going on. We're visualizing our storage, our networking, our service templates, etc. So all of that visibility is going to come very, very quickly. user role consumption. So we have users out there that presumably have a quota. You've hopefully given them some boundaries based on those five dimensions of cloud capacity we talked about on Tuesday: the CPU, memory, disk, virtual machine count, or quota points. Somebody asked us about quota points on Tuesday. I was kind of taken aback.
And yeah.
You don't think about that one much.
No, but it's useful. It's useful as custom's the wrong word, but it's a way of simplifying in some ways if you don't want to think about disk and memory, you just want to think about it in simple points manner, I give this cloud 20 points, and each template, maybe it's 2 points, maybe it's 5 points, maybe it's 10 points, and that's how you work out your boundaries. It's a little bit simpler, but perhaps less specific, but it's there as an option.
Yeah, I was quite comfortable with it by the time we got to the 2012 family, for sure. So all of the aspects of VMM health, so virtual machine manager, our server health, our library server, from a Hyper-V perspective, host health, host cluster health. I can put, we don't even mention here the failover clustering management pack, which will give us deep visibility into our cluster health, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And we talked about several types of clusters on Tuesday, most notably Hyper-V,
yep.
and our scale-up file server.
Two important ones, especially going forward when we move forward to R2 as well. That's the cluster and the scale-up file server, they're just ramping up and ramping up, and you're going to see some amazing stuff if you haven't already. It's really starting to move forward.
Now these last two are kind of my favorites. Application and application role health and service health. If we configure all of the integration between the System Center components, between Operations Manager and Virtual Machine Manager and Service Manager, we are going to see in our monitoring console the availability and health of our services that we deploy from those service templates very, very quickly. There's a connector of sorts that gets created in the background, and you'll see those services popping up in your console almost before they're actually fully deployed, which is pretty exciting and gives us visualization into what's in that service template. So if you have a multi-tier service template with maybe a web farm at the top, a data tier at the back end we deployed web deploy applications, so our IIS application deployment technology, we looked at the SQL DAC packages, we deployed some data tier applications. All of those components show up in your Operations Manager console, right?
Yep.
And the icons look exactly as they do. They're very consistent with what we see in VMM. So if you're familiar in one interface and you switch back and forth, you're going to find that it's a very comfortable experience. We know exactly what we're looking at.
Yeah, and that applies also to Service Manager to a large extent. When you start to integrate with Ops Manager and VMM, and you start to see from what you've got in your VMM environment, templates, service templates, and so on. So there's method to this.
So I have this strange itch which tells me we've been talking for far too long and we need to show you something. So
I have that same itch.
Uh-oh. Let me get into a demo here quick before he says something else. Matt McSpirit, the hybrid cloud wildcard.
Yeah.
So
thanks.
So we'll jump into my demo environment here, and we'll look at some of what we created on Tuesday and have a look at some of the monitoring that's already in place. I just want to take you through what we can see by default once we've installed those management packs we were talking about, VMM and Hyper-V. I'm really going to be focused kind of on the VMM piece to show you how we can look at the cloud health and capacity, both from a user role level, because we have each of those clouds that has capacity, and we want to make sure when we hit 70-80%, we give those users a call to let them know they're approaching the limit. But at the same time, we need to be watching our underlying fabric, because that thin provisioning can take us into sort of a paradox there, that we've provisioned capacity and maybe don't have the fabric fully deployed to back that up, eh?
Mm.
So do you, when you talk to customers, do you find their thin provisioning in the field? Is that pretty normal in your experience?
Absolutely, because people have had that, let's say, feature exposed to them, not necessarily through fabric management tools, like what we're going to talk about with VMM and show, but more so on the storage side. You know, they'll have been thin provisioning LUNs of storage, so they'll be used to that concept of what thin provisioning means and the importance of both thin provisioning to better utilize capacity, but at the same time, alerting to associate if you are nearing what you've actually physically got in the underlying pool of resource, then you're going to get notified. And that's incredibly important. It's one of the common questions we get when we do talk about things like thin provisioning of virtual disks, for instance, for VMs. You want to use a dynamic VHD? Yeah, that's fine. I'll create a 64 terabyte one now in Hyper-V, but I don't have 64 terabytes of underlying storage. Where does the monitoring and the alerting come in for those kind of notifications of me consuming all of my capacity? So it's incredibly important. But people are starting to be a lot more aware of it thanks to virtualization and storage technologies.
Yeah, and so Matt's confirming a really important point there, that thin provisioning is a fact of life. So it's going to be very important that we not only get our Microsoft management packs in, we go out to the partner communities, we talk to our hardware OEMs, our storage folk, and we get those third-party management packs in that are going to give us true visibility into our capacity down there at the fabric layer, so there are no surprises in our cloud environment. You know, one of the most important shifts when we move from traditional virtualization into a cloud-based service delivery model is our capability to manage in a reactive way goes away, because the cloud brings that perception of infinite capacity and continuous availability, etc.
Yeah.
So I can't move that fast anymore. There's no faking it now. So let's look at our Ops Manager console for just a minute here. So I'm down in the administration workspace. So again, over here in my nav pane, looking at where we do the heavy lifting in our Ops Manager configuration. If I just right click anywhere up here in the navigation menu, I get an import management pack menu. And I can connect right out to the catalog on the Microsoft website. I can import my management packs for Virtual Machine Manager, for Hyper-V, etc. Windows, get those all loaded here. And if I have agents deployed out to my fabric components and to the virtual machines, etc., we're going to get visibility into all of those systems more or less automatically. Because Ops Manager includes more than just the ability to monitor, doesn't it?
Exactly. Just before we move on from the management pack side in terms of that import process, just to clarify, can I download partner MPs through that, the wizard you were about to show? Is it purely going to be Microsoft ones?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the partner MPs, you'll need to go to the actual marketplace out on Pinpoint.
Or the partner's website.
The partner's website. In fact, on Pinpoint, typically you'll find the partners link you right over to where you need to go in their website. I kind of use Pinpoint as my marketplace as my portal into all of those capabilities, because I know my System Center partners have come and plugged their collateral in there so we can find them easily. So
that's pinpoint.microsoft.com.
Exactly.
Yep.
A great one-stop shop.
And you download it, you choose the add from disk option within that wizard you had before, yeah.
Yeah, precisely. So let's get into the monitoring workspace here, where we look at what's been discovered and being monitored in our environment. And I'm going to spend most of our time in Virtual Machine Manager, and I'll give you just a quick zoom here for those of you that have my eyesight, which is less than 20/20. For every management pack I import, I get a folder here. And I'll drill down into the Virtual Machine Manager folder, where we have quite a number of views that are created by default in this management pack. So I have a little dashboard for cloud health, for example, that will show me the clouds that we've provisioned and discovered. Now, what I like about all of the dashboard views and operations manager is the data is live, which means if I see something monitored on the screen there, I can right-click it, and I get this little open nav menu. So check this out right here. I can drill down into any type of data that I'm interested in for this monitored object. So alerts, the diagram view is literally going to draw a picture of anything I put it on, whether it's a server, a service, deployed from a template, etc. It all pops right up. What I want to show you is sort of a little hidden gem for a lot of folks, and that's the Health Explorer you see there. So if you want to know what kind of monitoring has been implemented by default for our cloud state, I can launch that Health Explorer, and this is going to show me a list of, first it's actually filtered to show me the unhealthy monitors. I'm just going to open this up and we'll look at all the monitors. But what I wanted you to see here, what I want to focus on, is that we have by default some pretty smart monitoring to tell us how our cloud is doing in terms of health. So you'll notice the monitoring here is drilling down into CPU, into memory, into storage. It's drilling down into those five dimensions of cloud capacity. So we don't care how you decide to provision the capacity to your users. We're going to have visibility into those automatically. Now look right below that and you'll notice that we have memory as well. So cloud fabric memory. So this is giving us capacity monitoring from another perspective, right? So we've got the user perspective up top, and then we have the what we really need to help our cloud, our fabric administrators understand behind the scenes.
So if you were for instance, a tenant admin in VMM, so you had a little bit more privilege than a regular self-service user. Mm-hmm. So you've been designated the kind of head guy for that particular cloud. Let's call it the engineering cloud.
Okay.
I can scope in Ops Manager these kind of alerts specific to that user. So when I go into OpsMan, I can see specific CPU usage count, quota count, memory usage count specific to my engineering cloud. And that's all I'll see. I wouldn't see all of the alerts for the rest of the clouds, which is, I think, is really powerful to help me, again, that noise ratio of stuff that I don't need to worry about and act upon, that helps me scope that down perfectly.
Yeah, very important point. Your console experience, whether you're in the full console or the web console, which mm-hmm. will allow us to drive that view from anywhere we may be working, is all driven by our role-based security. So Operations Manager, like the other System Center components, has role-based security, and it's been divided into profiles that map to job roles. So these profiles allow me to pick a level of access. My tenant admin is probably going to be an advanced operator. I'm mm-hmm. going to give that tenant admin capability to process their own alerts, but that advanced operator role allows them to do a little tuning. They can create what we call overrides mm-hmm. to customize the threshold of the monitoring. Maybe they don't think 80% of capacity is quite as critical as I do. So it allows us to have some autonomy there to deal with the reality that we have differing perspectives in the world about what is an actionable alert. But to Matt's point, when we create these user roles, we have the capability to narrow the view down to only show specific folders. So I could show a tenant admin just a folder that shows them their cloud capacity, their deployed services, etc., and it's just a simple wizard that allows us to drill down and check the boxes to reveal only the folders here in the monitoring space that are really important for that sort of monitoring. But you'll notice here off the shelf there are views for all manner of components in our fabric. So the host clusters, IP address pools. And I'm just going to grab that IP address pool and I want to show you a little something there. So you notice there that IP address pool says not monitored right now. Mm-hmm. Remember that. We're going to write that down. We're going to talk about that later. We're going to avert the blame engine. And because, brace yourselves, even Microsoft is not perfect. Okay, so coming from the outside, there's a little gap here in our IP address pool monitoring, so we'll talk about how we fill that gap really easily with the System Center. As we mentioned, there's more than one way to do everything, and we'll find that way. Now, I want to just cover off that diagram view very, very quickly. So I'm going to look at a relatively simple diagram view here of a Windows computer. So Windows computers discovered by our Windows Operating System Management Pack. I get all of those same views we talked about. So what I'm going to drill down into here is the diagram view. This is going to draw the nice picture for me. And remember, I don't care what type of object that you're right-clicking. If it's a database server, a SQL database engine, a Hyper-V host, this diagram view is going to show us all of the objects that are hosted by this entity, this monitored entity. So I'll just hit that. What I really like about this diagram view is every manager likes Visio diagrams, don't they? They want you to draw a picture of what the environment looks like. And when it comes to Visio, I'm a little bit lazy. So these diagram views will allow me to kind of mess about and filter my diagram layout, but there is a little export to Visio icon up here at the top, so I can shape this picture exactly as I want it. Hit the export button. I now have a Visio diagram, which...
But that would be static at that point in time. What I think is awesome with Ops Manager is what you see on the screen now is a living, breathing representation of health and performance of this particular... it could be an application, it could be a host, it could be anything, as Pete's discussed. The beauty of the simplicity of popping it out to a Visio diagram is great from that reference. I can include it in a document or print it out and put it on the wall. But I could also spin that up in Visio services within SharePoint. And that helps me reflect that running, that live state, but it might be included within a broader SharePoint page or website that's been used within the environment.
Exactly. So we can start with a simple Visio diagram. We can take it and turn it into a living, if not breathing, entity that's updated with the state of the objects that we have on the diagram.
Yep.
And again, we can take that and publish it into SharePoint with the services that are available over there in SharePoint 2010 Foundation Server. So to be real clear, we don't even have to have a big enterprise version of SharePoint. You know, SharePoint 2010 Foundation is actually the component behind the scenes powering the service manager self-service portal. So whether you know it or not, you have SharePoint in your environment, right?
If you've got Service Manager portal, yeah.
Indeed. And of course we have Service Manager because we really want to deliver an optimal self-service experience, right? So hopefully that's a good first look. And we're going to be back here a couple of times today. We want to stay focused on the cloud aspects of monitoring. So let's move on to our next topic here, and I want to talk about configuring integration between these components for what I call a dynamic cloud. We saw with Orchestrator on Tuesday that it integrates very nicely with the other System Center components, and that's not where the story ends. We saw Service Manager with its connectors that allowed us to automatically populate our configuration management database, our CMDB, with the objects that were present in our cloud environment, and we could create incidents and changes, the work items that were associated to those. I'm going to talk about a different kind of integration here, kind of the holy trinity in my view for monitoring our cloud and really having full visibility. And that's configuring the integration between Operations Manager and Virtual Machine Manager and Service Manager. There's an interdependency between these to give us the full picture in a very dynamic way.
And that is the full picture.
That is the full picture.
Nice.
Good. So we have performance and resource optimization. So there's some monitoring that comes in the Virtual Machine Manager management pack that will drive what we call pro tips to our administrators on the VMM side. Do you want to talk about pro tips?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. So it's interesting with pro tips. Pro tips was first introduced in the previous wave of Ops Manager and VMM, and its sole goal really at that time was Ops Manager knows about stuff in the environment. It's monitoring, it's got the insight, it's got the relationship between hardware, as we discussed before, the DIMMs, the power supplies in the hardware, and the virtual machines, because it's built up that view of all of the infrastructure. But what pro tips gave were effectively alerts that were fired from Ops Manager to VMM that told VMM to do something specific to virtual machines based on an alert that Ops Manager discovered. So for instance, if you had some hardware and you had the appropriate hardware management pack that was pro-enabled, which was an extra bit of work for the management pack author to make that, say for instance that Ops Manager discovered that a power supply had been pulled out of one of the servers. The server is fine, it's running, but it's now running on one power supply instead of two. An alert would generate naturally an Ops Manager to reflect that, but if it's a pro-enabled alert in a pro-enabled management pack, not only will Ops Manager send the alert, but it will also ping VMM And in VMM's console, while the virtual machine manager administrator is using and looking at VMM, a pro tip would pop up, as Pete said before. And that pro tip would basically say, look, your server has got words to the effect of, your server has got now just one power supply. That could be a problem because if you lose the other, the server will go down and VMs will enter a failover state where there will be a little bit of downtime. We recommend putting this host in maintenance mode. The VMs will evacuate using live migration, so no downtime, to the rest of the cluster, and then you can go and fix the problem. And you'd be given two simple options, dismiss or implement. And by clicking implement, it would be automatically carried out effectively. Now, you could completely automate that process as well. You could choose to automatically accept whatever pro tips came in, so the systems would effectively do it themselves. But the admin may want that level of control.
Yeah, now just to distill that briefly, Matt, do pro tips work only for Hyper-V?
Pro tips would work for other virtualization platforms as well, yeah.
And do we have any flexibility to configure pro tips for different severities of alerts? Can I take different actions on warning conditions versus critical?
You could do, yeah. You've got that little bit of granularity as well, and it's evolving. It's going further and much more configurable now in 2012 and SP1 as well. So it used to be that pro tips was the only way to effectively balance your cluster. So there's a bit of confusion out there as well for people who've used previous versions of System Center with Hyper-V, that pro was the only way to get virtual machines automatically migrating around a cluster to balance them. In dynamic optimization in VMM now in 2012 and SP1, that's taken care of. But pro is still very valuable for those alerting scenarios like the one I just explained. So it's still a very important part. But it's just unlocked as soon as you plug together those components.
Yeah, and Matt brings up a great topic we didn't spend a lot of time on Tuesday, and that's dynamic optimization. So Hyper-V has that capability, VMM has that capability to help us balance the load across our hypervisors without the need for pro in operations managers we had back in the 2007 to 2010 timeframe, as
correct.
I like to call it. So we have maintenance mode integration now too with VMM and Ops Manager, right?
So if you put a host in maintenance mode in VMM, it's going to reflect in Ops Manager as well. So you're not going to suddenly receive lots of alerts to say that a host has gone down because of planned maintenance in Ops Manager. VMM and Ops Manager are on that. They're synced on that level that they understand each other a lot more nicely now.
Yeah, and so Service Manager is also an important point here. So if you recall from Tuesday, if you weren't here Tuesday, Service Manager has a connector framework that allows us to import information from Operations Manager, from VMM, from Configuration Manager, from Active Directory, from third party through a CSV import capability to get all of our assets into that single database, kind of that central view of everything we have to manage in the world. And virtual asset population in the CMDB is going to be automatic. And even if we're not deploying to VMware through VMM, I like to talk to the virtualization team over there and get that integration between Virtual Machine Manager and vCenter setup, because it's going to enable me to get some of those VMware assets into my CMDB so I have some visibility, even if I'm not deploying or enabling deep monitoring at this point. It's just allowing me to dynamically collect those resources so I can begin to implement some lifecycle management and keep tabs on what I have to control the S word. Do you know what the S word is now?
Sprawl.
The right S word?
Sprawl.
All right. He's he can be taught.
Yep.
We talked about data for pre-populated list in the self-service portal. We don't, we want to minimize the free text so folks can come to that portal and we give them answers. We don't ask them, too many difficult questions, right? We want it to be easy. It's not a quiz. It's delivering a service, and making our self-service portal request offerings intuitive is just a part of moving from that technology focus in IT to a service-oriented IT organization.
Mm-hmm.
So my other second or third favorite, I have a lot of favorites, so this gets difficult to keep track of after a while, auto incident creation from alerts. So we talked briefly on Tuesday about the Ops Manager alert connector and Service Manager. We were really focused on getting our assets into the CMDB, into the Service Manager CMDB on Tuesday. There was also an Operations Manager alert connector. So when critical alerts come up in my environment, I can, via that Ops Manager alert connector, which we can configure from Service Manager, I can tell Service Manager to go ahead and create the incident automatically. I can tell service manager when the alert is resolved in ops manager. Let's go ahead and resolve the incident automatically. Now, and there's two ways we can handle that. We can let service manager request the alert be closed when we close the incident, or we can let ops manager do the driving, which is my preference, because those alerts, that monitoring is stateful, right?
Yeah.
So ops manager knows the difference between green and yellow and red, and when we move back into a green state, it's automatically going to resolve that alert for us. So I like to kind of err to the side of that native capability. And for everything else, for all of those nooks and crannies where we have little bits and bobs we'd like to get into our CMDB from third-party platforms, Orchestrator has, you know, several integration packs that will enable us to import that data into Service Manager automatically. In fact, I'm going to show you a runbook this afternoon that contains two activities that will automatically create a configuration item in the CMDB. It's really that easy. It's very flexible.
Nice.
A lot of options. So we'll kind of see the capability there in action and how simple that actually is. So let's move into the integration between Ops Manager and VMM and Service Manager. So we're going to start over in Virtual Machine Manager with how we integrate our operations manager system into VMM. So over here in the settings workspace in the lower left, you'll see up in my navigation pane I have system center settings. And I'll just bring this window up and we'll drill down and have a look at what we see here. So pull this over and I will summon the power of Zoomit. And you'll see here that we get a fairly simple wizard that will allow us to configure the integration. You'll notice we check the box to enable the connection to Ops Manager. We can turn on the pro capabilities that Matt very nicely described at our option, and we can also enable maintenance mode integration. So let's explain to them what maintenance mode integration really means in a VMM Ops Manager perspective. How about?
Yeah, so from a VMM perspective, VMM has had this feature, if you will, I suppose we'll call it that, for a little while now, and it enables... Say, for instance, you've deployed a patch to your Hyper-V host in this example, and you want to make sure that you've deployed the patch, everything's gone well, but that patch may, on occasion, need a reboot. So maybe it's a hardware patch, maybe there's some form of maintenance. We can right-click that particular Hyper-V host in VMM, we can put that host in maintenance mode, and that will effectively evacuate the virtual machines that are running on there, move them to other appropriate nodes in the clustered environment, and then you can go ahead and restart that server as necessary or perform whatever maintenance you need to actually perform. And that, you know, you'll take a few minutes to do that. If you do need to reboot that host, whilst it's rebooting, Ops Manager is still monitoring it. And if it monitors it and sees that a host is going down and it stops responding to communication, it's going to raise an alert. And that's going to land on somebody's desk, maybe through a subscription or whatever it may be. We want to avoid that because it was planned maintenance, it was planned downtime in this example, instigated by the VMM admin. So maintenance mode and that integration between Opsman and VMM now means that when you do right-click and put that Hyper-V host in this example as in maintenance mode, that is reflected in Ops Manager as well. So alerts are effectively paused for that period of time until it comes back up, and then it will be re-enabled or maintenance mode will be turned off, and that will again reflect in OpsMan.
Yeah, and with our pro tip, so the maintenance mode integration feature, that's something that I think should just be automatic for everybody. It's a very basic feature and doesn't really impose any change in our environment that's not an obvious good and positive change. The pro capability, you know, we're getting into some serious dynamic workflow almost, for lack of a better term. And I like to approach that carefully. You know, fortunately, we have some flexibility with how we configure Pro that we don't necessarily have to put our Pro tips on autopilot, right? Mm. We can be selective in how we configure Pro and maybe just turn on the tips popping up in the infrastructure, right? So
now, if this was a completely fresh install, you know, I've got a brand new Ops Manager, I've got a brand new VMM. They are two worlds apart at this point in time.
Right.
Would I go to that screen first? Would that be the first thing I did?
You know, it wouldn't be the first thing you did. So let's just take that in order. So the first thing I'm going to do is actually install the operations manager console on a VMM server.
Right.
And I'm going to install the VMM console on the operations manager server. And you might ask, why do I do that? Well, there's some SDK integration here, and each needs the SDK of their neighbor component, mm-hmm. so we can have that integration. So, to be clear, when we configure that settings node with pro tips and maintenance mode integration, VMM, you know, has the Ops Manager SDK there, and it can drive, you know, via PowerShell some activity over to Operations Manager, and Ops Manager will have, you know, that SDK capability in the opposite direction, so Ops Manager can drive pro tips over to VMM. So each is, yeah. it's a two-way street. So on the, you know, at the beginning of it, just first step, I'm going to, you know, load those opposing consoles. Second, I'm going to come to the administration workspace in my Operations Manager monitoring console, my operations console, we call it. I'm going to import my VMM management packs here. So I want to make sure that I have virtual machine manager management packs loaded here. You'll notice there are quite a few of them there.
And where would you find those?
So out there at that magic URL, the pinpoint catalog.
Could you grab them off the program files, off the install files of VMM?
Yeah, yeah. So they come in VMM, and actually that's a good point, because there are a small number of exceptions out there in terms of what you don't find out on the pinpoint catalog, and that's one of them that you'll actually pull out of the install directory on your VMM server. So kind of lock that one in the back of your mind, because that's one of those rare exceptions. We're actually going to look at some Azure monitoring a little bit later that's in preview, and that's another one where we have to go out and get that from the catalog, at least today. Mm-hmm. So we import those management packs. We now have the key components we need for visualizing all of our deployed services and applications and fabric components. We have the Pro framework in there that will allow us to drive the Pro tips based on monitoring alerts. Step three is I'm going to go over to VMM. I'm going to configure those settings that we see in the console here. You see we can actually test Pro tips. I can't tell you how long I wished for that button. When Ops Manager 2007 first had the Pro capability, we can see that our management packs are loaded here and what version they are. So that's a good tip that tips us off that VMM is talking to Ops Manager at this point. Now there's also capability to pump some data into analysis services, into an OLAP cube that's going to be actually hosted over on the Ops Manager side of the house. So this isn't to be confused with Service Manager's data warehouse and those OLAP cubes I mentioned were. Are created by default, so this is going to be a little more specific to our virtualization and monitoring components here. So, and I find we don't use these as much in the field because we're really focused on that integrated reporting on the service manager side, because the CMDB is really the center of all knowledge, right? So that's where our configuration items are from our private cloud. That's where our work items are, the incidents and the changes and so forth. So
before we move on, there's a couple of good questions that have come in on the chat. Which if you've got questions, please use the Q&A, ask away, and we'll try and answer them as we go along if they're relevant to what we're doing at that point in time. Otherwise, we'll catch them at a later point as well. One of them was, does VMM move Hyper-V VMs, I guess, automatically to maintenance mode, or Hyper-V host automatically to maintenance mode if I'm using the update fabric from VMM? So if I was using the patching and the baseline functionality of VMM, would it put a host in maintenance mode, and then obviously that would trigger in Ops Manager as well?
So if you're not familiar with orchestrated cluster patching, when we patch a cluster in VMM, I simply, rather than patching an individual component, I'm going to go to my fabric here and just show you what I mean. I have to create a baseline of patches over here, and so this orchestrated cluster patching assumes I'm using the VMM built-in capability, right? I create a baseline of patches over here, and then I apply that baseline with my in my console, and I can put a baseline onto this cluster, or I can actually patch individual hosts.
The difference. So in the compliancy view at the top there on the ribbon. Ability to scan.
I guess I should actually just show you where we can deal with some of that. So we can, and we have to connect to just back up here, we have to do what we're talking about here to apply patches. I have to connect into an update server. So this update server is actually going to use a WSUS server. So if you have Configuration Manager, which uses WSUS 3.0 SP2, mm-hmm. same server. We can actually share a box here.
Yeah.
We'll create a baseline of patches. We'll apply those patches to our cluster, and then yep. VMM is going to manage putting evacuating the host, putting it into maintenance mode, which is going to trigger maintenance mode automatically on the ops manager side. So the trigger is based on the maintenance mode condition in VMM driving maintenance mode on the operations manager side.
Yep.
When the patching of the host is complete, when the reboot is done, it's going to rehydrate that server with VMs as it evacuates the next host in the chain, and it's just going to do that for us host by host. And the maintenance mode component is automatic. It orchestrated cluster patching puts the host in maintenance mode on the VMM side, which drives the ops manager maintenance mode, which quiets those alerts. So alert dampening, I like to call that. So
for that period of time.
Yeah, and for those of you that don't use the VMM patching capability, and I'll be very frank, in the field I see very few of my customers using this, less than 10% I would say, and here's why. Because most of them are using Configuration Manager. That is the most widely deployed system center component because it's also mm-hmm. the oldest, right? So,
yep.
So Config Manager has been around since we called it SMS back in 1994 when I was 7 years old. there's a big red light and siren going off in the background. Liar, liar, liar. So I find most folks out in the field are using Configuration Manager, and in conjunction with Orchestrator, which has a Configuration Manager integration pack, I can drive my cluster orchestrated patching in Config Manager using Orchestrator to push the right buttons to evacuate a host, to put it into maintenance mode, patch, and replicate that process. Because by and large, and it's not that the patching capability in VMM is not great. It's good. It's kind of a V1 effort, I'd say, to be fair. And we can set up schedules in Virtual Machine Manager, but the schedules are not automatic, so to speak. So, when I set up my servicing windows to leverage these, I have to use the PowerShell interface to go check those schedules. So if you're going to use the patch management capability here, it's kind of off topic, but just to cover it off, in VMM we're going to connect into a WSUS server, 3.0 SP2, just like Config Manager. We can establish our servicing windows, but to check these servicing windows before we initiate any sort of patch operation, I have to use some PowerShell, which is available on the TechNet gallery. And it will allow us to basically, from Orchestrator, pretty easily drive that same integrated patching capability. And come check these windows. So I like to say this is an absolutely functional technology. It's not quite as polished as what we see in Config Manager, where we have the same sort of maintenance windows we can apply to collections, and over there it's a little easier for us to achieve that capability, to be perfectly honest. I don't want to disparage the patching and VMM, but just to say typically we're already patching out of Config Manager, and so if that process isn't broken, we typically don't try to fix it. We just enhance or augment using Orchestrator
for that cluster awareness, taking them down in stages and so on.
But it's not complicated to drive that out of Orchestrator, because that cluster aware patching, when I right click a cluster node and select to apply that baseline, that's a very automated process. And to duplicate that in Config Manager, it's 6 1/2 dozen of another. So.
Yep.
Not telling you to do one or the other, just treat it sort of organically. When you come to a process refresh and you maybe have an opportunity to look at a new way of doing things, it's a great time to consider that as part of the transition, that maybe we want to go in that direction. So why don't we have a look at the chargeback reporting briefly? So, this really addresses maybe one of the most important elements in managing our private cloud environment, and that's to control consumption. We have to deal with the S word. Last time, Matt, what's the S word?
Sprawl. I nearly said solution because it was on the slide, but
No, so really, with chargeback, we're going to sort of shape or maybe even modify user behavior, because with chargeback or showback, as we like to call it, we can drive user behavior by showing them that things aren't free. Frankly, there's a cost associated with every virtual machine we deploy, and it's going to make us mindful of what we deploy, because we tend to deploy bigger than we need, more than we need, and then we go do our job and we forget that we deployed bigger and more, and maybe we even walk away from it and forget it's there. And we have what amounts to a zombie VM there that's just blindly eating resources in our fabric, right? Mm.
But before we go to chargeback, are there organizations out there that perhaps aren't ready to put the monetary element around resources, and maybe they just want to see what's going on? So a different S word for you in showback. Is that a middle ground between where you are today and producing those big VMs and so on, and then get into chargeback?
That's an excellent point. I would say most of the organizations we work with in the field aren't doing any form of chargeback at all in their traditional virtualization infrastructure. So as we move into that cloud-based environment, showback is where we always begin, almost always. I would say less than 10% of the orgs I deal with are really ready for very sophisticated chargeback mechanisms, and those that are ready to move into a self-service, private cloud infrastructure, they've already been doing some sort of chargeback or showback, so we're really just trying to take it a step further. But showback is perfectly normal, and that's a good word for what we can get very easily with System Center 2012 SP1 with the chargeback reporting here, because it's good basic chargeback reporting, I like to say. If we want to get down to the CPU cycles and the very tiny elements of storage, if we have a very complex chargeback model because we've been doing this for a while, I might even look outside System Center to some of those System Center Alliance partners to supplement that. We'll talk about the top of the mountain where chargeback is concerned a little bit later, after we kind of get into that hybrid discussion. But that's a great point. So you don't have to begin charging people money. And when we look at chargeback, if you haven't had those discussions ahead of time, you're going to ask yourself, so what is the right amount to charge for this? Well, it really depends on the cost of what you paid for your infrastructure and what it takes to monitor that. So there's some math that has to be done by somebody else in the background, hopefully. Yep. But let's look at our solution topology here. So we're going to drive chargeback reporting out of Service Manager. But we need to use that connector framework to get the information into our CMDB, into our Configuration Management Database. And you'll notice the arrows here show Virtual Machine Manager into Operations Manager. And yes, it's true, there is a degree of separation between Virtual Machine Manager and Service Manager. So many of the elements that we deploy over there in Virtual Machine Manager to our hypervisors comes into the CMDB by way of Operations Manager. So quite literally, we configure that integration we were just talking about between Ops Manager and VMM. It drives the data into Operations Manager, and then using the CI connector, the Configuration Item connector for Operations Manager, we get it into Service Manager. Now you notice the data warehouse is down there at the bottom. And on Tuesday, I alluded to the fact that Service Manager has a data warehouse. That data warehouse has a process for transforming our data into reporting ready data in half a dozen OLAP cubes. So there's some business intelligence, some BI capability there without hiring a BI guy. I can spell BI, but I'm not a DBA, right? So this kind of gives me a leg up, I think, in that respect. Because I'm guessing the BI experts probably aren't cheap, are they?
I wouldn't know.
He wouldn't know, because he's not a BI guy either.
No.
So I digress. So with chargeback, this is a kind of refreshed, shall we say, in Service Pack 1. We're going to import some management packs here in the background in Service Manager. The management packs you have to import in the background are actually done through a little PowerShell script. So there are some sort of dependencies there that I don't like to worry too much about, because frankly there's only so much we can remember. But they make it pretty easy in that there's a PowerShell script provided that will import management packs, those underlying management packs to facilitate chargeback for us very easily. And then we can create price sheets. So I can begin to form that basis of show back or charge back for my customers. And you notice here there are five little white bars with blue text that correspond to our five dimensions of cloud capacity. So again, CPU, memory, storage, our virtual machine count, if we want to track this in virtual machines. And we can also put, there's kind of a new spin here, cloud membership. So we can have a base charge for covering the foundational operations associated with the cloud, because certainly we have a networking team that's not free, and the backup folks, and
the BI team,
and the service manager is my BI team. That's the beginning of my BI team anyway.
And just to be clear, these are per day charges. I can't go any more granular than that in the box today with what we've got in the price sheets with service manager.
That's a great point Matt brings up. These are per day charges. When we get to Azure, we'll have a similar discussion around where we were and where we are. So this is what I like to call basic chargeback and showback reporting. If I have a very sophisticated set of requirements that get down to hour per minute or CPU cycles, that sort of thing, then I'm going to need to look outside system
to the partner
center.
Community.
Yeah, really, to the partner community, which has more than, I've stopped counting 165 the last time I saw it on a billboard, and that was a couple of years ago. So it's gotten bigger since then. So there are several chargeback solutions that are system center integrated that will augment this capability as you grow. So we'll look at what we can do in the box and talk about how we can go, maybe a step beyond with the partners. But it gives us that ability to really put some hooks, some teeth into our quota to drive back to folks a picture of what it is they are consuming. Because certainly there is a time and a place to scale up within virtual machines, to deploy, those VMs with 64 gigs of RAM and 32 vCPUs, etc. But those don't come very often, so we really want to. It's going to help folks to be more careful in their decision making processes when they know it's not free.
Yeah, and keep it on for the whole day.
Yeah,
if you're going to do it.
Yeah, that's an important point. So with the per day pricing, really, once you turn it on, you're charged for the day. I think it's at the halfway point officially. It charges you for the full day.
So you get half a day for free, potentially.
It might have changed in Service Pack 1. There was a point there where I think the half day was the tipping point. So yeah. I like to tell my customers when you hit the power button, when we turn it on, just assume you're being billed for the day at this point. And we can create different price sheets that we can associate to cloud. So I can have one price sheet for the gold or production or whatever we call that top tier cloud that has the clustered hypervisor layer, has the fast storage. We've got SSDs and SAS and so forth. We just basically create price sheets to correspond to our various resource pools and our various classes of service. So it comes back to that discussion we had Tuesday around classes of service. Sort of categorize your customers and your service offerings so you have a manageable number of services to deliver, and you can carve your cloud fabric up into resource pools very easily. So as we make our first steps into the cloud, identifying that low-hanging fruit, those relatively simple use cases, we can maybe even leverage existing hardware, because we know that sometimes we don't have brand new hardware sitting in the corner waiting for us to install Windows Server 2012. We might have Windows Server 2008 or 2SP1. We might have VMware Zen Server. This is just a continuation of that class of service sort of thought process, so we don't give folks so many choices that they are just paralyzed by all of the options. So these chargeback reports, again, they require service manager. We do need the data warehouse. This is where our data is coming from by default. We need operations manager and that CI connector, because again, there's a degree of separation between VMM and service manager, and that's that some of that data is flowing through operations manager. So if we want to do chargeback reporting, these are going to be required equipment, the bare necessities, if you will. And we have the management packs that we need to import that I mentioned that come with the pack, and then there's a PowerShell script that comes with that chargeback feature that will install all those management packs for me. I remember the first time I installed the like preview release of Chargeback, I failed to RTFM, you know, read the friendly manual, and I was trying to import all of these management packs one at a time, and you know, some management packs have dependencies on some others. There's an order they need to come in, and I, you know, immediately sent an email out to, you know, my MVP lead and said, I can't get the, I mean, I've been at this for an hour, and he, you know, and replies simply RTFM, and so this PowerShell script will bring all of your management packs in a snap. The sample Excel report, you know, shows us just a simple chart-like capability, so we can connect into our data warehouse and look at that chargeback data. So that's really going to leverage Excel and Power Pivot as a nice way to do that. Now, Performance Point is a SharePoint component, and certainly we can tap a data warehouse with Performance Point. That's going to, you know, take, that's a more sophisticated offering, you know, in terms of the dashboard it's going to provide. It's going to be a different skill set. So I will, in all fairness, say Performance Point is above my pay grade, but I quite like Excel and Power Pivot because I can understand pivot tables.
But the beauty of it is the data is in one place. It's in the data warehouse, and how you slice it and dice it and present it is largely down to your skills, your requirements, what you want to visualize. So if you've got BI guys who can slice and dice information and present it through very rich, very relevant dashboards in SharePoint using Performance Point, or whether you want to present it through Excel and maybe render it in Excel services in SharePoint, you've just got so much scope. It's entirely up to you, and but the key thing is, and the hardest part of that whole process is just getting the data there. And that's what we want to make sure you understand is relatively simple.
That is absolutely a fact. I can remember, you know, projects that took us weeks or months to get all of the data into one place and to get it into a data mart in the, you know, with the schema developed in just the right way, which meant there were all manner of planning and design and data import and database schema design, you know, to design our cubes. So all of that's done for us. So there are hundreds of hours of effort and, you know, many, many thousands of dollars of work that's already done right out of the box. So so let's just keep pressing on here and talk about our price sheet. So a price sheet is really just going to be a fancy Excel spreadsheet, frankly, that will allow us to define our price policies on different cloud objects and then to assign that price sheet to cloud. So there's an association between a price sheet and a cloud is where we're attaching that to cost. So we're not attaching that anywhere down at a virtual machine or a service template level, which means, you know, designing our cloud and deploying to clouds rather than deploying to host and host groups is going to be very, very important because VMM will allow you to deploy virtual machines and services from service templates to host groups, to clusters, et cetera, right? So remember, that's why we're deploying to clouds, why we're taking that extra step and defining the cloud capacity, because it allows us, you know, that logical definition of the capacity we've given those folks to get into that data. I can associate one or more clouds with that price sheet, and then the information in the price sheet is going to be shown in the OLAP cubes, and there's a sample Excel report that comes with the chargeback feature that gives you a starting point for your chargeback capability. Now, remember that you have to publish a price sheet before you can associate cloud objects to the price sheet. So I have to create the price sheet and set it to publish, which implies that, yes, I can unpublish or set it to a draft state of sorts, so it's not actually in use. But I have to create the price sheet and publish it before I can associate it to anything and have it mean anything. Your example chargeback reports look exactly like what you see up here for Power Pivot and Excel. As Matt said, SharePoint, Performance Point. I have a few customers that are using Performance Point as part of their SharePoint implementation already, so we just have to give them the data source.
Yep.
And pretty quickly we can get in and do a lot of good things with that component. And you know, Performance Point is now a component of SharePoint, where back in the day it used to be a separate product, a very expensive product, frankly. So kind of a nice thing Microsoft did for us there. So
it's all about value.
Yeah. So let's assume that I've imported my management packs, that my configuration, you know, that we already put together with OpsMan and VMM and Service Manager, our connectors are in place, so the data is coming into the data warehouse, the management packs that we import are relatively easy. You run the PowerShell script. It tells you, hey, I've imported the management packs.
Is there two PowerShell scripts to run? I think, do you run one on the Ops Manager server, one on the Service Manager server?
Yeah, great, great point, yeah. So, and then that, you know, speaks again to that shared lineage of Operations Manager and Service Manager. Service Manager was based in part on the Ops Manager platform, so they understand management packs very much in the same fashion. But, you know, in that, we can import Operations Manager management packs in Service Manager to consume those classes, to light up new classes in our CMDB and to bring CIs across. So I'm going to import the management packs on each side, each driven by PowerShell script, so I don't have to worry about the dependencies, etc. And that's going to light up some new... Oops, let me get into the right console, how about? It helps if you're in the right console, I find.
Yes.
So if you want to configure chargeback in Service Manager, step one, get into the Service Manager console. So once I import all those management packs, it adds a new node into my Service Manager interface here. I have the chargeback node here, and you'll see that I've already configured a basic price sheet. So I have down here in my price sheets a gold price sheet, and over here in the tasks pane, I have that task that will allow me to create a new price sheet. And so the question always comes up, how much should I charge? Again, that's a highly organizationally...
How much do you dare to charge?
You know, the answer is different for everybody because it needs to be based on your operational cost. We need to look at what it takes for us to manage and operate our cloud. So we know that the fabric has a certain cost associated with it. We know that IT operations, you know, personnel, the smart people that are managing our cloud are not free. So you're...
There's a good question actually come in about this price sheet. Say you've created this price sheet now, you publish, and your cloud starts to generate, or your VMs and so on, start to generate consumption, and it starts to register in, let's say, the Excel spreadsheet as an example.
Okay.
And you've got a certain amount of value now associated, cost associated with each VM within the cloud. What happens when you, 2 months down the line, as an example, you change this and publish over the original? What happens from a pricing perspective there? Does it just get aggregated on? From that point forward, or?
Well, so the changes are happening from that point forward in your data warehouse, right? So you want to be forward-looking with that. But these are Excel-based reports or performance point-based reports, so typically we will historically kind of knock those out and save them historically, and you can then safely unpublish, republish, and...
But would it recalculate everything that's happened from the previous 2 months?
To my knowledge, no. It's a forward-facing only.
Right, okay.
That's my recollection, so feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. But yeah, I don't believe it goes back and recalcs historically. It's looking at what I'm...
So from June the 1st onwards, when you change the price sheet, the value of the cost of each VM and the day and the storage will now reflect the new price sheet.
Yeah, so I'll take that as an aside, and I'll actually check in my environment here and look at that. That's a great question, though, not one I've heard very often. So you see the price sheets on the screen here. So I actually just launched that create price sheet. You know, the general tab is really just putting a name to this price sheet. So I called this my silver cloud price sheet. And I'll drill down so we can see this at a slightly magnified level. So you see I can put a base price per day in here for cloud membership. So this is just the cost of, enjoying the right to consume the shared resources.
I'm in your cloud, thank you.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, though, what's so nice about this is pay-as-you-go can be a very good thing. I can remember a lot of conflict in environments where a department had to figure out, you know, finance would have to figure out how they were going to pay for the infrastructure to run their new ERP application. And now they can, you know, come to this shared environment, you know, as a tenant, an apartment dweller, if you will, and they just pay a membership fee.
Yeah.
We can put a base price for our VMs. You see, we can set base price on the resources within the VMs. And then we even have some advanced options, they call them down here, if I want to charge a little more for high availability. So on the gold, you know, production side of things, if I want to charge a little more for high availability, even if I want to charge more for static IP addresses, I can do that. and then for, you know, expansion capability. So I've got a few elements I can work with here to get a nice foundation for showback.
And it doesn't matter what currency, because obviously it's just generic numbers. So when you bring it into Excel, for instance, that's when you'd apply your...
Yeah, so Matt's called out the funniest question I hear about this is, but what currency is this in? So it's currency agnostic.
Correct.
We like to say
that was the term I was looking for.
You don't see the pound symbol or the dollar sign there. So choose your currency. We have it's been, I like to say, globalized.
Yeah.
Chargeback has been fully globalized, regardless of
in
your...
this example. Yeah, correct.
And we'll go to our assigned clouds, and you notice I don't have any assigned clouds here because I haven't published this sheet. So you have to publish your sheet before you can assign anything to it. So I'm going to run through here and put some prices in here. And I'm not picking anything specific because the prices I see in here are not the same in any two organizations. So I try to share with folks the formula for calculating something that makes sense in your environment.
I would say that's quite an expensive cloud.
That is going to be quite an expensive cloud. You know,
I'm gonna look elsewhere.
Oh man, tough audience here. I tell you what.
Well, so I hit the $10. I mean, per day.
All right, the blame engine has been fired up.
Yep.
Blame engine in full effect. So I hit the publish button, and now I'm over on the assigned clouds node again. And you'll notice now the add button's lit up. So now we can assign this to the clouds out there in my environment. So this will pull up the active clouds I have in my environment that don't have a price sheet associated to them. Now, you might remember that yesterday we had a VMware cloud and we had a Hyper-V cloud, but it only shows me here my VMware cloud. That's because I used my Hyper-V cloud for my production. I brought in my new 2012 servers and used that for my production workloads. I'm using some of my older hardware where I'm running VMware as my silver, my kind of my legacy or less mission critical workloads in this case.
Mm-hmm.
No disrespect intended to you VMware folks out there, just the way I happen to have it configured here. So
So
I assigned my vSphere cloud there.
So just while that's going on, we got another question more so on how you can set all this up in an environment, particularly if you're not blessed with lots of resource to set all of these system center components up, because typically in large-scale enterprise production environments, you're going to have these workloads isolated in individual servers, typically VMs, but maybe on physical servers as well or alternatively. But when it comes to install service manager, you can't coexist that with some of the other components. Is that right? What would you recommend if people are looking to do this on perhaps as little hardware or little OSs as possible?
So that's a great question, and that's a question that comes up about three or four times a week for me, to be honest, as we're sort of resourcing projects. We look for opportunities to cohabitate our components. So let's take Service Manager, for example. There's no such thing as a single server install for Service Manager, but I can capitalize on some opportunities to consolidate. So I have to have a separate management server for my management group, we call it, for my CMDB. I have a separate management group for my data warehouse, so I know I'm going to have two servers straight away. What I'll typically do, rather than having two dedicated servers, is I might begin with one SQL server. Maybe we'll just hit the magic of OneNote here, and I will draw you a very unsophisticated picture with my artistic medium of choice, my finger.
So for instance, with Service Manager, do I have to have the data warehouse in place to actually use it, excuse me, or am I just losing quite a bit of functionality through not using it?
So do I have to have the data warehouse in place in order to use it?
Yeah, to use the product, to get some value from it.
Gotcha, great. I just wanted to clarify what it was. So we can live without the data warehouse at the most basic level. So let's cover off this resource sharing opportunity, and then I'm going to speak to what we lose if we don't have the data warehouse, because I feel your pain there, frankly. The transition is always not ideal, is it? So I know I have to have a server for my management group, and then I have to have my data warehouse management server. So what we have here are two management groups, we call them, two distinct silos for management. So typically I would want a separate database server for each of these. You could put SQL on that same box and right here. So with this data warehouse, when we say the data warehouse, I'm talking about that as though there's a single database. That's not really the case. There are like three databases there and then half a dozen OLAP cubes. So there's a lot of database. There's an ETL process, we call it, that's transforming and loading that data over into those cubes. Mm. There's a lot of heavy lifting going on behind the scenes. So the fact that I don't have to have a team of BI people to make that happen, I do have to put some compute.
Yeah.
And network and some compute and storage behind that. So
it's fair to say that Service Manager is one of the more intensive applications within the System Center.
Right,
products.
Right. So with great functionality and capability comes a bit of a resource intensity. So what I like to do as a resource sharing opportunity is take these database servers to get an element of scale in terms of performance. So I'll take these databases and I'll move them back here. And that can be kind of my first opportunity to create this shared SQL database server.
And green is healthy, I presume.
Green is random, highlighted color to make my point.
Right, okay.
Now, other systems have more lightweight databases, so I'm going to cover these off for you very quickly. So VMM, for example, very lightweight database. Orchestrator, or SCO, as I will call it. These are pretty lightweight databases, so starting out, I'm typically going to let them share a database. App Controller, and I will give this the SCAC. Anything I'm doing here is going to be lightweight. I can plug components in here that have little or no database capability. I'll share. So a lot of times what I'll do is I'll let VMM and Orchestrator share. I'll load App Controller on the VMM front end because those self-service user interfaces, at least initially, don't tend to be high-scale multi-tenant scenarios, right? We have a few people to a few dozen a day coming in. I'm not processing 5,000 requests a day. Yeah. I'm processing
App Controller 15. Is pretty light as well. It's only a small installation, but it does require that SQL database.
So we want to make sure that we're leveraging no more SQL than we need. So that's a great starting point anyway.
And your licenses for SQL do come with the System Center product that you license. So for using SQL for System Center, you're pretty much covered. Now, is that the end of our diagrams?
That is the end of our relatively unsophisticated diagrams.
Because before the question comes in, we will make those diagrams available for people, isn't that right? In case they want to print them,
I'll spare you the pain of that. Yeah. It's a little bit hot in the studio. My sticky fingers make them even less precise than they would normally be.
We'll get a signature on there as well from Pete, just so you personalize it.
Just P, just the letter P. Yeah, That's all I'm going to do.
In green.
So let's maybe talk about optimizing, from a different perspective here. So creative problem solving, I like to call it. So, we System Center delivers us a lot of capability out of the box. It solves a lot of these fundamental problems. We do have some gaps to fill every now and again, and there's more than one way to do most anything in System Center 2012 SP1. Orchestrator really provides us some interesting options for closing those gaps. And I was just thinking about, what sort of use cases have popped up in my mind out in the field. So we see, reporting on how cloud health and capacity, the chargeback is delivered in Service Manager. The monitoring of that health and capacity happens over in Operations Manager. And then, we may have other sort of gaps that we need to fill. I can think, for example, just controlling sprawl. It doesn't have to be complicated. And I want to just show you an example from the real world. I sat in the room with four people, and they drew a picture of what they wanted, and the guy in the corner that was managing the hypervisor layer that was controlling, managing the virtual machines in their environment where they had, to be fair, limited capacity in their cloud. He said, it would be fantastic if you could just send me an email every morning and let me know which virtual machines are expiring. And so you may ask yourself, expiring? That's something I'm a big fan of in the real world.
Life cycle around the VM.
Yeah. Even if we don't have hard set expiration requirements, especially for test and development workloads, I'll try to help folks establish a base, lifespan of test and dev virtual machines. So we might put a 90-day, expiration on there. And what we did in about 15 minutes was went into Orchestrator, and we created what I call the VM Aging Report Runbook. So what I have here in this first activity is a simple piece of PowerShell that gets the date. It gets my expiration date.
From where?
So it's just going to use the getDate function. So it's dead simple.
But where is that date about that VM stored?
Yeah, so what we're doing is comparing the date on the VM itself that's in Virtual Machine Manager. We're actually, what we typically do is stamp the expiration date on the virtual machine as a custom property.
I was going to say, is it a custom property?
Yeah, so VMM gives us the capability to create custom properties, name, value, pairs. So I'll create an expiration date. You could also simply use the native time added property that's on a virtual machine and just look at time added versus current date, and when that VM crosses your threshold, like in this case, I've simply configured this little run.NET script activity, go get the date and subtract 30 days. So when I do the math and I see we're beyond 30 days, it tells me we have expiration. So I want to go get some emails flowing out to people. So this runbook is really quite simple. It calculates that expiration date. It's going to delete my report file. This is actually an attachment I'm going to put on the email. It's just a text-based little CSV file. So my admin can open it in Excel. I'm going to use the append title, the append line activity, to actually recreate the file from scratch. And you notice I'm appending a line here with just virtual machine name, creation time, owner, host. So I'm getting the name of the person who actually requested this provisioning originally, which is tracked automatically when we capture that request through Service Manager. It's deployed. We've got the lineage of where this came from, so easy to go figure out who that is. And the host it's deployed on, just so we can kind of understand where we have hotspots in our cloud fabric. The get VM activity in the Virtual Machine Manager integration pack allows me to go get VMs, retrieve the virtual machines that exhibit certain criteria. So what I do here is just go grab the time added in this case. So a little connectivity issue there, but when I open this up, the only filtering I'm doing here is just on the time added to pull them back.
Yep.
And I'll do the math with this link here, with a conditional link, to check to see if the date is older than my 30-day limit, and if it's older, then I'm going to kick off this append line activity, which writes that virtual machine and its information into the file. And you notice here, this is actually my properties of my get expired VMs. I'm actually just looking here to see if the expiration date is older than my expiry date that I configured up here in the little PowerShell snippet. So again, if you know PowerShell, I can use that little snippet to my advantage. So it writes it out, and then 3 minutes after I start, this is the send email activity, native standard activity in Orchestrator, and all I'm doing is sending an email report to myself with that attachment to tell me what's expiring out there. Point I'm making for you here, this isn't, you know, the polished, you know, chargeback experience we were talking about. It's simple, it's useful, and I can bridge these gaps based on the request we have out there wherever it suits me. So in the real world, things are not always going to be perfect and pretty and uncomplicated. Mm-hmm. And so this was a 15-minute solution. We actually built this over sandwiches in the conference room. You know what we didn't even get to was the chargeback report, the actual report that we see when we go into Service Manager, use that report that's provided for us. Now, I took the default report, which had those pretty charts we were looking at on the slide earlier, and I actually applied them to my cloud with my prices. And so to Matt's point, for my example here, I have a very expensive cloud. So I can promise you it didn't take me $10,000 to put that lab together, nor $10,000 to care for it most months. But it's this sort of capability that I can get pretty easily, and with Orchestrator, I can do a little magic to drive some of this via email if that's what I want to do. The thing about Excel and Power Pivot, when we connect into the data source, all I have to do is refresh the data source. So when I come in, Power Pivot's a great component. You want to make sure that you get comfortable with Power Pivot. We looked at Power Pivot Tuesday when we were connecting into Orchestrator to get the GUIDs for our runbooks and runbook parameters. So get comfortable with Power Pivot, you know, with some of those simple examples. And this is going to be a great opportunity for you to come over here and play around with the dimensions of your cloud fabric. You'll notice that there's quite a lot in here, and I think I probably played with this for 4 hours the first day, just kind of sorting out some of the options I could put together. On the TechNet blog, so out at blogs.technet.com, out on the Cloud Builders blog, there's a few good posts around.
There's some documentation as well, specifically to setting up chargeback, which is really useful. And I found it useful for my learning to actually just play around with that sample chargeback report that comes with the Service Manager install files. But as it stands, before you start to configure it, it is kind of, it's got data in there that's sample, but you can click on the data link in Excel and update the connection and point it to your repository, your data warehouse, with a couple of pieces of information it needs, and you've effectively then replaced that data with your own. But you've taken their formatting, their styling and stuff. So it gets you going quite quickly.
You get a template there, yeah. So you're going to move along pretty quickly. You don't have to reinvent the wheel there. It's not all from scratch for sure. So and that's how we typically do it in the field. We take that sample report, we go, you know, update the connection, but the documentation for the cloud for the chargeback reporting in the cloud is step by step, and it's really just quite foolproof at this point in the at this stage in the game if we get all of our required components installed, etc. So you know, that brings us to kind of the conclusion of our first session today. So we've talked a bit about monitoring our cloud availability, our performance, how we need to integrate our system center components to get all of that data into Service Manager, into the nerve center, the center of knowledge, our CMDB. We looked at our dynamic elements of integration. Matt talked at length about pro tips and how we can use that to dynamically make load balancing and migration decisions in our workload to drive guests to the most available, the healthy host in our environment. We've got basic chargeback and showback capability right out of the box, a lot of flexibility in how we handle the pricing and pricing for the high availability elements for HA and static IP addresses, etc. And always remember, can we do it with Orchestrator? Usually the answer is yes. So I like to, out in the real world where we're not dealing with a perfect situation, if I can put together a quick and simple solution, while I work on that more polished long-term solution, Orchestrator is going to be a great sort of gap filler to deliver something fast to kind of meet the business need until I get, into a more well-planned, larger strategy for my environment overall. And there we have it. So
we'll wrap up. We'll leave it for 10 minutes. Go and get a drink or some food, and please join us again in 10 minutes, where we've got a few questions that we'll open up with and just wrap up, because I think they're still pertinent and there's some good ones come in, but we want to give you a break. And then we'll start back up with the second module. So yeah, thanks for your time so far, and please join us in 10 minutes.